You're listening to the Hog Sports Network Daily Podcast. Now, here's your host, Matt Jones.
Basketball is a funny sport. This time last week, we were talking about would Arkansas have a 1-9 SEC record this year, and now all of a sudden they've won two road games. They're back in the NCAA tournament conversation. They beat Texas last night 78-70 down at the Moody Center in Austin. That's back-to-back SEC road wins now for Arkansas, and as you talk about the Razorbacks trying to get back into the tournament conversation, you know, we said they got to go steal a road win or two somewhere. Well, now they've done that, and now all eyes turn to Bud Walton Arena and how the Razorbacks might respond this weekend with Alabama coming to town, LSU's here in the midweek next week. Basketball, it's like a breath of fresh air has been infused into this basketball team. We'll talk about the game today. We've got Anthony Christensen starting the show off. Anthony was in Austin last night and is on his way back right now. Anthony, just how do you explain how Arkansas's fortunes have turned around in the last week the way they have?
I think the conversation absolutely starts with John L. Davis. He just wasn't very effective at the season, and part of that obviously comes down to, you know, the wrist injuries he was dealing with in the off season, and then later on in the non-conference slate as well. But he just kind of didn't look like he belonged in the system they were running. And then now that he is taking on more of a ball dominant role, just kind of by necessity, with Boogie Flan being injured, you're seeing him kind of take on that role and really thrive in it. I mean, 24 points. I think he had at least two assists, if I'm not mistaken. Yeah, two assists, four or five rebounds, four steals as well. So, I mean, it's not just on the offensive end. It's on the defensive end as well. So, I mean, I think that's where the conversation really starts. And especially these last couple of games, I mean, they've been just a lot more effective shooting the ball. You know, they didn't take as many threes last night as they did against Kentucky, but still 7-17 on the three-point line, 41%. They were 13-25, you know, against Kentucky, and then shot 44% from the field in total. So, I mean, you're seeing a team that's, you know, just playing a lot better on the offensive end. You know, they had to reshuffle things with Boogie Flan getting injured, and now I think you're seeing that they've found some sort of answers. Now, you don't want to, you know, overreact too much. Obviously, it's just a two-game winning streak, so that's that. But, I mean, it's three wins in four games, and like you said, they've found themselves back in the NCAA tournament conversation. And if they can continue to play well, and if they were able to beat Alabama, then they'd be firmly in that conversation. But, you know, that's a discussion for after that game, but I think the conversation really starts with John L. Davis really embracing more of a prominent role in the offense and really taking advantage of it, for sure.
And I don't know that it's just Nelly Davis either. I mean, it just seems like everybody has taken on more personal accountability since Boogie Flan went out of the lineup a couple of weeks ago with this thumb injury. DJ Wagner, I mean, he has really stepped up. I think Adu Thero has stepped up. You saw him last night play through an illness. Avisic has stepped up. You mentioned, you know, we've mentioned Nelly. I would even say Billy Richmond has stepped up. I think you see everybody on this team has really elevated their game, with the exception of Jonas Adu, and I want to talk about him a little bit later. But it just seems like this team, you know, it's kind of had a, I don't know, maybe like a come to Jesus moment where they said, hey, it's now or never, and everybody's got to elevate their game, and they've responded to, you know, to that task or to that challenge.
Yeah, absolutely. You mentioned, obviously, you know, that come to Jesus moment. I guess, you know, sometimes when, you know, Boogie Flan, I thought, was pretty unquestionably their best player before he got hurt. And now that, you know, he goes out, the team, I think, just kind of comes together and realizes that they're going to have to, you know, replace all of his production. And it has been a kind of a by-committee, I guess, journey, if you will. You mentioned, obviously, DJ Wagner. He didn't have a very efficient shooting night, but, I mean, he had four assists and I thought was active defensively. Had a couple of really nice drives that kind of, stymied Texas's comeback efforts late. But, you know, he was really good on the defensive end. I thought his distribution has been really good since Boogie Flan has been out. Zvonimir Visic, again, not really his most efficient night, but a double-double for him and, you know, a couple assists again. You look at this and, you know, Billy Richmond had a huge block there in the last minutes, you know, while playing on four fouls as well. So mm-hmm. I think you're seeing the team, you know, play aggressive, play more free offensively, you know, that if that makes sense. And I think you're really starting to see the effects of that. I thought Adu Thiro, you know, had a really good night, you know, despite his illness. You know, obviously you want to see him shoot better than 50% from the free throw line, but maybe you chalk that down to, you know, him being sick or whatever. But it was a complete team performance. I mean, you don't want to give up as many offensive rebounds as they did, 13-3 in that department, but I don't think you're going to see many people complaining about that if the wins keep coming. So that's, yeah, a complete team performance, and I think you're seeing a lot of guys kind of step up and kind of taking on more responsibility, more of a role with Boogie Fland out.
Well, and those offensive boards didn't hurt Arkansas last night, 13, but Texas only got eight points out of those. I'll tell you what stands out to me in the last two games is that there have been moments of defensive lapses. They didn't play good defense in the first half against Kentucky. They obviously let Texas get hot late in the game last night. But, you know, you look at the second half against Kentucky, 20 minutes, they played really good defense, maybe as good of a defense as a team has played against Kentucky, at least on their home floor for a half the season. And then in the game last night, I mean, Texas went through these just really long scoring droughts. They had one that was almost 7 minutes around halftime that really allowed Arkansas to take control of this game. Last night at one point, Texas was 12 of 43 shooting. And I just thought, again, Texas got hot at the end, but the defensive work that Arkansas did over the first maybe 25 to 27 minutes of that game really made a difference, and it was probably as good of a defense as we've seen from Arkansas this year. Everybody focuses on the shooting, and Arkansas's point totals are up. That's true, but I think a lot of this is that defense is leading to some good offensive opportunities. They're playing as well defensively here in these last maybe three halves as we've seen them this year.
Yeah, and I asked John Calipari about their defensive game plan. You mentioned the defense in the first half. I think they held Texas to at least three scoring droughts of at least 2 minutes in the first half. So, I mean, their defense has been really good. I think the on-ball defense has been spectacular. And then I think, obviously, you get Adu Thiro and Savano Miravicic and even Billy Richmond getting into the blocking game. I think they finished with seven blocks and I think it was eight steals. So, I mean, defensively, they've looked really good. And I know that, you know, Calipari had said that, you know, they just wanted to be aggressive and really pressure the on-ball, you know, pressure guys who have the ball. You know, and some of that was also Texas just kind of missing shots it would typically make. But defensively, they've been really good. I think the on-ball pressure has been a lot better of late. I mean, you see a guy, you see the way they were playing on Julian Larry in the first half. I mean, they were doubling him up at different points and, you know, causing him some problems, which, I mean, that's Texas's leading assist guy, leading a sister, I guess would be the right way to put that. But you're seeing them play more aggressive defensively, I think. You're seeing them play smarter defensively. Obviously, the second half, you know, there was a lot of fouls called, but I think that's kind of the big takeaway. But, you know, with all those foul calls, you're going to want to clean that up because obviously, Adu Thiro fouled out, and then Billy Richmond and Carter Knox are both playing on four fouls. So, you'd have to dip back into the reserves if you're gonna, you know, have multiple guys foul out. But that's really, I think this is only the second time they've had somebody foul out this season. At least that comes to mind. It's really the only time I remember them having some pretty big foul trouble. Which I think that kind of bodes well, kind of going down the line for sure.
You know, I have a tendency to bring everything back to baseball because I cover a lot of baseball. In 2022, when the baseball team got out of Fayetteville and got away from kind of the negativity about that team, they got hot and they nearly won a national championship that year. How much do you think it's helped Arkansas, the basketball team, getting out of Fayetteville, kind of getting away from everything these last couple of games? And, I mean, you've been on the road with them here for the last, you know, week, it feels like. Just what's the vibe maybe around the team as they've been on the road?
I think you're seeing a lot of guys, you know, build their confidence. I mean, that was the first time I talked to John L. Davis after the game, and you could just kind of, you know, get the sense of, you know, he feels like himself again. You know, not that he would ever, you know, say that explicitly, but you remember how he played at Florida Atlantic. This is, you know, what he looked like when he was, you know, leading a team to a Final Four. Not to say Arkansas is Final Four bound or anything, but you know, they're getting John L. Davis at his best. And I think that kind of, I mean, not just John L. Davis, but I think that that level of confidence is kind of like visible around the team, if that makes sense. I think you saw it when, you know, DJ Wagner and Deuce Hero were talking to media after the Kentucky game. Those guys are, you know, they're enjoying their basketball. I think it is kind of what I'm seeing. And, you know, whether or not, you know, it helps that they've gotten out of Fayetteville where it was kind of, you know, negative after the Oklahoma game, I'm not too sure, or I don't know that I can really give a full answer on that, but maybe it helps just to kind of get away and kind of be in your own little bubble, if that makes sense. Mm-hmm. So maybe it helps them kind of clear their heads and get away from that. And now 3 wins in 4 games, and I'm expecting Bud Walton to be a pretty good environment for Alabama on Saturday. But yeah, I think you're seeing a lot of the guys, you know, for the most part, kind of exude a lot more confidence than they were kind of early on in conference play, I should say.
Yeah, there's a lot of buzz here right now about that Alabama game coming up Saturday night. You know, DJ Derrick's going to bust some eardrums during that one. It's the biggest game of the year for Arkansas. Here at Bud Walton, at least to this point in time. Hey, speaking of home arenas, we talked about this a little bit yesterday. On a unique scale, where would you rank Moody Center?
Moody Center was interesting because you have those.
Well, they tell you to keep Austin weird, and I think they've maybe succeeded a little bit with their basketball arena.
Yeah, it was because you could see they've got the big like boards up on the ceiling. They're hiding extra seating. I guess that's there for
concerts,
whenever they have big concerts and mm-hmm. everything. But it was interesting. I liked the setup. It was weird, and I like weird arenas. So that was fun. When Texas was making its run, kind of getting back into the game, that was when the crowd was at its best, and you know, there was a decent amount of Arkansas fans who made the trip down, and that kind of made for a fun environment, and it was a cool little arena experience. I liked Austin a lot as a town. It was my first time there, so it was overall, I mean, very fun trip. But Moody Center, weird, but I liked it.
What's your final takeaways from this game?
I think the biggest takeaway is that the team looks a lot more confident. Just kind of like going back to what we were talking about earlier, they look a lot more confident. Like even when, you know, DJ Wagner didn't have his most efficient shooting night or scoring night, he was still, you know, had the ball in his hands, like looking to make the big play there kind of down the stretch. And John L. Davis just looks like his Florida Atlantic self, like we said. And you're seeing a lot more, you know, guys stepping into those roles. I think defensively we mentioned it. You know, they were really good in the first half, maybe not as good in the second half just with the fouls. And I know people weren't exactly super happy with the officiating in that game. It was a little tough to see just, you know, being up top and kind of looking down. You don't get the greatest of angles for all the different calls. So I have no comment on any officiating. But I think the biggest takeaway is that, you know, the team looks confident. They're enjoying their basketball, I think, for the first time in a little while, and I think that bodes well. I mean, obviously Alabama is coming in here as one of the best teams in the country, and that's going to be, you know, a really interesting game to see how Arkansas kind of approaches it, because, you know, do you try to make it a shootout like it kind of was with Kentucky, or do you think you can, do you think you have the guns to hang with an Alabama? I'm not sure, but you know, that game plan is going to be really interesting. I think they've got, you know, the defense to, you know, keep it close, if nothing else, you know, especially with how they played in the first half against Texas. And obviously Alabama is a much different team than Texas, and I would argue a much better team than Texas. But I think those are the biggest takes for sure. I think especially if you can get Jonas Adu kind of, I guess, back to his best, which I know has kind of been a little bit of a struggle for them this season. You know, I think that just would add a whole new element to the game. And yeah, I mean, even though like, his one field goal was like a step back jumper, which, you know, is kind of, you know, something we saw him do at Bud Walton Arena last season when he was with Tennessee. So maybe that gets him going. He also had an assist, but you know, if they can get him going, that adds a whole new element to their game. But I think the biggest thing is the team looks confident. They're playing well, and especially on the defensive end, I think with their on-ball pressure, I think that's the biggest thing. And then, you know, feed John L. Davis, I think, is the other takeaway for sure.
Anthony, appreciate your time. Be careful, and we'll see you here in the studio tomorrow.
Absolutely. I'll see you, sir.
All right. Anthony Christensen driving up I-35 right now. He's in the passenger seat. Hank, our photographer, is driving, by the way. But Anthony on his way back from Austin. You can get the latest breaking news on all Razorback sports at wholehogsports.com. Most in depth source for all Razorback sports analysis, latest in recruiting, unique stories on all your favorite Razorback teams. Subscribe today at wholehogsports.com. Your subscriptions allow us to do things like send Anthony and Hank on the road. We've gotten a lot of great stuff from them, both in Lexington and in Austin in the past week. So we thank you for your support. One day you can find our podcast on Apple and Spotify. We've got a video version on YouTube, and we post that to our Facebook and Twitter pages. Search any of those platforms for Whole Hog Sports to find our latest podcast. When we come back, Ethan Westerman is going to join me here in studio. But first, a word from our sponsors.
At Kendall King, we're proud of over four decades of design. We're continuing the legacy of great creative design by combining our brands of Kendall King, Soapbox, and ShopCart. Together, these brands represent a new focus in marketing design with individual attention to specific areas. Through our design expertise supported by a team of talented professionals, we showcase our best. We are Kendall King, we are Soapbox, we are ShopCart, we are design.
You know, Arkansas team came in, played really well tonight. Coach Cal had his team ready to play an aggressive style defense early. They really came out, set the tone with their defense, really out-physicaled us in the first half. We didn't do a great job of taking care of the basketball. I didn't do a great job of having my guys prepared to handle the kind of pressure we were going to be facing right off the bat, and thought we were much better in the second half. But give them a lot of credit for the way they played tonight. They really, you know, dictated how the game was played throughout the course of the game. So give them a lot of credit for what they were able to do with their defense tonight.
Texas coach Rodney Terry after the Razorbacks 78-70 victory last night in Austin. You can watch that full video of him and his players on our YouTube page at Whole Hog Sports. I'm joined in studio by Ethan Westerman now. What'd you think watching the game last night? I mean, do you watch those games? I don't know if I would say my jaw is on the floor as I'm watching them, but when you think back to kind of our perception of the basketball team week 2 weeks ago, what we're seeing right now just looks so much different, and it doesn't even really look like it's the same team, even though it's the same roster.
Yeah, I mean, the question going into last night was Arkansas, Kentucky a one-hit wonder? Was this one thing that's going to live in Lexington? Players were hyped up for that, and it's just going to stay there. And I think they answered that yesterday, that it's not, that it wasn't a fluke, that they are playing better and they're playing a lot more confident. The main thing I took away from the game was Arkansas, you know, is now 3-1 in its last four. Had a loss to Oklahoma that, you know, they want that one back, of course. But I think Arkansas, with those three wins over that stretch, has shown that it can win in different ways, which is important. I mean, you ask any team that goes and wins a championship in March, how they got there, and usually it took multiple ways of winning games. Not all, you don't win the same way. Against Georgia, that was just a knockout, sloppy, ugly, grinded out win. Against Kentucky, it was Arkansas catching fire and shooting amazing, best offensive game by far in SEC play. And then against Texas, I think it was a little bit of both. Like, it was really good defense early, and then they shot the ball pretty well. So it seems like they're starting to maybe find a little bit of a rhythm.
We'll tell you about our friends at Bentonville Glass. They've been serving their community since 1971, committed, professional, versatile. If you are looking for a quality leader in Northwest Arkansas, looking for skilled craftsmanship, look no further than Bentonville Glass for all your glass market needs with the highest quality products. You can come by and see them at 507 South Main in Bentonville or online at bentonvilleglass.com. ArkansasKentucky.com. You didn't think the game was very well officiated last night. The thing that stands out to me is that, and we were talking about this after the game, three of Arkansas's last four games have gone almost 2.5 hours or longer. Georgia, I think it was somewhere around 240. Oklahoma was somewhere around 225. Last night was 225. I mean, I guess it's a good sign for Arkansas that they're getting to the free throw line because they're starting to make their free throws now. I don't think they beat Texas last night, without the work that they did at the line. But, man, these games are getting really hard to watch. Kentucky was the one game where it didn't feel like it was overly officiated, and that was probably the best game this year, at least from an Arkansas standpoint, where you just talk about, an offensive flow. But, gosh almighty, these games are taking a long time, and it's because the officials are getting pretty whistle-happy.
Yeah, and this is my thing. Call it if it's a foul. Please do. If it's a foul, call it. But whenever it reaches a point to where they – like Arkansas had 5 fouls in the first half. So it seems like the way it's being officiated, maybe be a little bit more aggressive on the defensive end, go for blocks, whatnot, because that's how the refs are calling it. I think it was pretty lopsided first half, to credit Texas, for fixing their foul problems in the second half. I think it was 11-5 Texas fouls to Arkansas in the first half. But then in the second half, Arkansas has already put Texas in the bonus by 15-58 left in it. And I was like, this is about to be a long one. And you got down the stretch. If I'm Texas, I'm just taking it at the rim as hard as I can over and over because it's going to be a foul on Arkansas because if they breathe on them, it felt like, let's just blow the whistle. I just hate whenever a flow is taken out of a game. And I actually kind of, Arkansas built that big lead, 23 points. And I knew with the foul situation, whenever I'm looking up and Texas is in the double bonus, Arkansas has, I think whenever Texas got in the double bonus, Arkansas had two or three fouls, or Texas had two or three fouls on them. I was like, this is about to be, they're going to get back in this a little bit. I didn't think they'd get down all the way to 5 points, but I was like, they're going to go to the foul line so many times this half that they're going to get back in it. So credit Texas for making the plays to do that, but it was, I just don't like when a game feels like it has no rhythm anymore, and the refs just kind of lost hold of the game, in my opinion.
Some stats to know from last night. Nellie Davis, 24 points on 7 of 15 shooting. It was 4 of 8 from 3. Anthony mentioned he had 5 rebounds, 4 steals. Those steals were really crucial to helping Arkansas get out to a good start. Adu Thiro, 14 points, only played 22 minutes. He was sick, fouled out with about a minute and a half to play, and 13 points from DJ Wagner last night. In 37 minutes, Arkansas shot 22 of 50 overall, 7 of 17 from 3. That's not a bad number. 27 of 35 at the line. But then you look at Texas's numbers, 22 of 64 from the floor, and it could have been a lot worse for them. They were shooting ice cold at one point, 20 of 27 from the line, 6 of 22 from 3. Texas committed a bunch of turnovers last night, 11 turnovers, most of them in the first half. Arkansas was able to capitalize those, scored some points off turnovers, 12 points off of turnovers. Trey Johnson, he was as advertised for Texas, had 25 points, nearly brought him all the way back in the second half. Tremont Mark, man, what a dud of a game that he had in a game that he had been psyching himself up for playing Arkansas. No points, played 21 minutes and had 4 fouls.
Yeah, it was not a good game for Tremont. You could see his frustration when they panned him on the bench late in the game. Like, he just very frustrated. But yeah, overall, Arkansas did kind of what I think you have, just what you have to do against a Texas where, I think Trey Johnson's going to get his, like, more often than not. He's going to find a way to score. But you look at his efficiency. I mean, he was 6 of 22 from the field. So you didn't, let him just go off making tough shots. He scored 10 of his points from the free throw line, and that came in the second half whenever everything was a foul. So Arkansas did what they had to do against them. And I look at the free throws, and it's pretty remarkable that Arkansas, with Adu Thiro being under the weather, he was responsible for 6 of their missed free throws, and Arkansas went 27 of 35, which means that the rest of the team only missed 2 free throws. So I just think Arkansas had a lot of guys step up. And whenever you've got the rotation that they do and you're in foul trouble, it was just all about hanging on, and that's what they did.
John Calipari after last night's win.
What he's done, he's busted through all that. You know what was great today? He's on the court talking to Carter when Carter fouled. Like, we need this clock to run. You're fine. Just keep playing. Don't foul. Wow. DJ, the way he's playing. Wow. Adu made a few plays. He was sick as a dog, probably shouldn't have played. But he made a couple plays. TB played. We have a full roster playing right now. Billy, how about that last block out of nowhere? Who could make that play other than him? You got to show me. So, and again, look, Texas is playing well. They have played well. They have turned it to where they were like us. Their schedule dictated their record. In this league, sometimes it's not how your team's playing. It's who you're playing.
Now, Arkansas knows that well, but because of the way they started the SEC season. I should have let off that soundbite a little bit better. That was Nelly Davis who he was talking about there at the start, talking about he's busting through. Calipari, there's like a relaxed, I don't know, feeling about him right now. It seems like he likes his team.
Yeah, I get the sense from him that he thinks that they've turned a corner. I mean, any coach after you win back-to-back games is going to be thinking, back-to-back road games is going to be thinking that you're playing better. But it seems like a genuine, we figured this out from him. And I mean, it all starts with the two guards, DJ Wagner and John L. Davis. Those two have to play like they did Saturday, last night. Just if Arkansas wants a chance to continue to compete, you just have to have those performances from those two. I said it in non-conference way that I told you I thought DJ Wagner, him shooting and better and playing better offensively, was huge for the team. I think that now that you have that combined with John L. Davis, it's just a different team.
I think it's, again, basketball is one of those sports where momentum plays such a huge role in it, whether it be momentum of a game or just momentum of games, you know, like as how those games kind of fit into your season. And it's just so funny how momentum has turned here for the Razorbacks whenever it felt like they had none 7 or even 6 days ago.
Yeah, and that's why, you know, whenever you lose games like they did, you just have to start, like, the solution is stacking wins. You have to match your losses with stacking wins. And the same way that losing can be contagious and lead you down a just snowball loss after loss, a win, a big win like the one they had at Kentucky can do the same thing. Now, can they take it into Alabama on Saturday? I don't know. That's a really good Alabama team. But who would have thought that this time last week we'd be talking about Arkansas against Alabama and just how you think Arkansas has a good chance to at least make it competitive, if not win.
Were we talking about that?
Were we? What were we talking about Thursday?
I think I actually said that there's a good chance they're going to be 1-9. Yeah. After the Alabama game, and like most of my predictions this year, that one has not aged well. Talking about bouncing back, John Calipari had some thoughts on that last night, and here's what he had to say.
You have to go through failure if you're ever going to have success. You have to walk through those gates. You got to deal with failure, and that's what we were dealing with. We lost a bunch of games. Like, I was looking like, sheesh, what's... Anybody lost all 18? They said, yeah, last year, Missouri. I said, well, geez, they're pretty good right now. But, you know, proud of the kids. I told the TV after at halftime, I love coaching this team now. How about they struggled like that and stuck together? How about they struggled? And I had somebody ask me, you afraid they're going to let go of the rope? Were you in the room?
I was in the room. I wasn't the one who asked.
You weren't the one that asked. Yeah. I said, well, they would have let go of the rope already. And so... they're fighting. They know. I still think we got a ways to go to reach where we should be. I do. But I'm just happy we won this. The last game on the road, two road wins in this league, two road wins, tells you we're not too bad.
It kind of feels like Calipari's got that us against the world thing going on right now.
Yeah, he's enjoying this little, I think, let's just be real.
Triumphant return.
The context of the past week could not have gone much better for Arkansas basketball. The fact that they've been getting dogged by predominantly Kentucky fans for the season they've been having, and then Arkansas goes in there, beats them, and it's like now Kentucky's hitting the panic button. It just seems like in the course of a week, somehow the two fan bases have completely flipped how they're feeling moving forward. I just think for Cal, it's got to be pretty nice to know that his team right now is the one that's starting to show improvement toward the end of the year. I've been saying it for a while now that it's not how you, like, you, who cares if you're kicking butt in January? How are you doing February and March? You can't dig yourself too big of a hole in January to where you don't have an opportunity to play in postseason in February and March. And I think Arkansas just about did that. Mm-hmm. I mean, they avoided...
They got about to 5 feet, 10 inches.
Exactly. I mean, what Calipari said after the game on Saturday, he said they had us in the coffin. They just didn't have the nails down. And I was thinking of, you know, the Eric Musselman gif where he's lying on the ground. And what was that a reference to? Do you know what I'm talking about?
Probably The Undertaker.
The Undertaker. Yeah. That's what it is. I was thinking, that is Calipari having his own version of the
Undertaker moment?
Yeah, but I mean, they really did. I feel like the hole was just about, you lose at Kentucky, that hole has been dug too deep. And they somehow got out of it. And I think that that's just what you have to keep on coming back to, is it's not how you play in early January. It's where you're at February, March. And I think Arkansas, and since I brought up Kentucky, they both had a big injury. Lamont Butler for Kentucky, that's huge. It really affects them defensively. I mean, he's a great offensive player too, but their defense just is way out of whack. And then Arkansas loses Boogie Flan, which on surface level, I was like, how is this offense even going to flow? We're learning that DJ Wagner can be a pretty good point guard, that he, the offense flows through him pretty well. I mean, of course you want Boogie Flan still. You can't take all that production all around the court and not think that it helps the team. But I do think that they used a rough situation of losing Boogie Flan to let Jonnell Davis and DJ Wagner gain a lot of confidence. And I checked ESPN's bubble watch this morning, which factors in their BPI, it's all analytics, and it has Arkansas as a 52% chance right now to make the NCAA tournament. So their forecasting thinks it's more likely than not that Arkansas makes the field. So it's in 1 week, your fortunes can change completely. I think I said this 2 days ago, that the weeks that you can get two wins are just huge for you. Anytime you can stack wins in the SEC, it just does so much for you. And if they can make it three in a row Saturday, I mean, you're feeling really good.
Well, especially winning on the road, because they're going to get some wins at home. You got to steal some road games, and now they've done that. And they've still got South Carolina coming up. Maybe they can get one there. We'll see.
But that's also now a – that's the thing about the SEC. There's not a bad loss, but South Carolina is if there was one. So it's now you're like just avoiding
– Yeah.
You got to get good wins and avoid – that type of loss.
One game at a time. Well, today you can stay on top of all Razorback sports with a digital subscription to the Hogs Illustrated app. It will give you our Hogs Illustrated magazine, 20-plus issues per year. Also complete access to our website at wholehogsports.com. Monthly subscriptions begin at $17. You can join now, hogsillustrated.com/subscribe, or call 800-757-6277. We've been telling you about our Hogs Illustrated magazine. We talked about it yesterday here on the show. You can get those. They're in the office now. Just give us a call, 800-757-6277, if you want to get this Hogs Illustrated baseball preview. We're awfully proud of this. When we come back, we got some baseball conversation, but first, a word from our sponsors.
At Kendall King, we're proud of over 4 decades of design. We're continuing the legacy of great creative design by combining our brands of Kendall King, Soapbox, and ShopCart. Together, these brands represent a new focus in marketing design, with individual attention to specific areas. Through our design expertise supported by a team of talented professionals, we showcase our best. We are Kendall King, we are Soapbox, we are ShopCart, we are Design.
Hey, welcome back. We are only 8 days away from the start of Arkansas's baseball season. Next Friday afternoon, Valentine's Day, they're going to play Washington State at Baumwalker Stadium. We got the TV schedule this morning for the Razorbacks. They're going to have 9 televised games this year, at least 9. There could be more than 9, but 9 televised games that have been confirmed. There's some flex scheduling that's a possibility here with this team this year. But the ones that we know they're going to have on TV, on linear TV, which is another word for what we'd probably call traditional TV on your cable box, on your satellite box, whatnot. It's going to be at Vanderbilt on March 28th, April 4th against Missouri, April 8th against Arkansas State, April 23rd against Arkansas Little Rock, April 26th at Florida, May 1st and 2nd against Texas. Those games will be here at Baum, and May 10th and 11th at LSU. Most of those games are going to be on SEC Network. The Texas game, the opening game of that series, which will be a Thursday, Friday, Saturday series, is going to be on ESPN2. Mentioned flex scheduling. They close the season with Tennessee here at Baum. My suspicion is that some of those games against Tennessee are going to also be picked up by a television network.
I was just about to ask you, I would make the percentage chance for an Arkansas-Tennessee baseball game to get flexed greater than 99%.
It's all about, you know, it's all about who's in the race in the SEC at that point.
Yeah, and I just, you know, history with these two teams, you think they're going to be both in the race. And, I mean, Tony Vitello, Dave Van Horn, we love the clash.
So 9 games for the Razorbacks on traditional TV. Every game is going to be streamed in some capacity this year, or that's the expectation, whether it be on SEC Network Plus, which is where you're going to be able to find most of these games. They're going to play a game at Missouri State that's going to be on ESPN Plus when they go down to Arlington here in a couple of weeks. Everybody's favorite Flow Baseball, Flow Sports, is going to have those games against Kansas State, TCU, and Michigan. But if you want the full Razorback TV schedule, you can go to our website. It's there right now. The Razorbacks with 9 games on TV this season. You know, I wrote a story on our website yesterday, speaking of baseball, and I don't know that I really went into the story thinking that this is what I was going to get. There's no divisions this year in the SEC. And I knew Dave Van Horn was opposed to this change. He's told me about this for a couple of years now. Like, he says baseball is divisions. Baseball needs to have divisions. If you look at Major League Baseball, it's divisions. You know, and he's told me that you look at college baseball, a lot of what they do is kind of mirroring what's being done at the Major League level. So he said, this kind of floors me, the fact that we've gone away from divisions. There was a teleconference yesterday for the college baseball showdown that's in Arlington to begin the season. And Mike Bianco and Jim Schlossnagle both were on there. Bianco, of course, the head coach at Ole Miss. Schlossnagle, the head coach at Texas now, but previously at Texas A&M. And so he had been included in these conversations with the SEC about the change away from divisions. And I went into this story thinking I'm going to write a story where, you know, Van Horn says it's not good, but maybe these other coaches say it's a good thing. And I was really surprised by what Mike Bianco had to say. We're going to play a little bit of an extended clip right now. If you're watching, you'll see the video. If you're listening, it's going to start with my question to both of them. You'll hear Coach Schlossnagle say something really quick and then defer to Mike Bianco. This is really interesting to hear their take on the elimination of divisions in the SEC. Nagel and Coach Bianco, the SEC's gone away from divisions this year. Is that something you were for or against? And what do you think the pros and cons are of going away from the division format?
I'll defer to Coach Bianco and his massive experience in the conference. The grandfather of the coaches, you might say.
I don't know how come I get all the questions, but I will say that I think I don't know, and Schloss may correct me. I don't know if it was unanimous, but I think it was that we chose to pick divisions, and just because, you know, I think, you know, optically, you know, from a standpoint from fans with 16 teams in our league, you could have a really good year and be 6th or 7th in our league and just be, you know, kind of clustered in the middle. I think it's great to be able to always, you know, strive to win a trophy. And I get, you know, to win the SEC is terrific, but, you know, to win the West or to win the East, I think is really cool. I think the ADs, and I don't want to speak for them, but I think they went more for the reasoning in football and some of the other sports where in the format with a 2 common opponents, you'll be able to get to everybody's facility or campus within a 4-year span, and they thought that was important for fans. They thought that was important for the student athletes. I don't think it's awful, but I think I like the West, and you know I thought it was a chance for us to even, you know, put the, you know, the map a little bit better, you know, where, you know, the teams in the East would really be in the East. But again, you know, sometimes we don't have that say, but I think the addition of the 2 teams, Oklahoma and Texas, just made us a lot better.
So, Coach, just to make sure I understand this right, the coaches wanted it, divisions and the ADs are the ones who decided to go the opposite way.
I guess ADs and presidents, you know. So, you know, like everything that happens in the conference, the coaches don't have the final say-so. The coaches bring up things in their particular sports, be it football, baseball, basketball. They vote on it, and then it goes to the athletic directors and the presidents after that. But that's not the only thing. Every decision that's made, obviously, goes, you know, the final decision is the ADs and the chancellor presidents.
Interesting peek behind the curtain here. I was very surprised because, you know, a lot of times what happens is that the athletic directors, they're going to vote the way that their coaches say, hey, we think this is the way that this needs to go. Obviously, what you have here is a situation where the coaches wanted to keep the divisions, but then, and I did a little bit more investigating yesterday, talked to someone at the SEC office. They said this was the final vote was by the league's chancellors and presidents based upon a recommendation from the athletics directors. And so the ADs went a different way than their coaches wanted them to go. Very, very fascinating.
Yeah, and it's crazy to me because normally you just would think you'd listen to the coaches, but I guess it's just from, you know, on the coach's standpoint, they like the optics of, you know, you could finish third in your division instead of eighth in the SEC. I guess from the AD and chancellor's perspective, or I guess it sounds like just the ADs probably gave the recommendation that they like that the whole SEC is, you know, kind of unified all as one in the standings and you have your like clear cut champion. I don't know. I think it would have been cool to like with 16 teams, you could have four team divisions.
Pods.
And that would have been really cool. Mm-hmm. In my opinion. I mean, that would have been awesome, but I get it. Like, I mean, I was telling you this yesterday, I cover softball and Vanderbilt doesn't have a program, but it's always been like, there's not been divisions and it's worked. Like I've never really kind of been like, oh, it'd be great to have divisions, but I was thinking about it. Had Arkansas had divisions in softball, they would have so many more titles to their name mm-hmm. right now because they would have been winning divisions. And I guess, yeah, it's just, you're ripping away another title that a team can have. And whenever you're in a very competitive conference like the SEC, an eight team division is extremely hard to win. And I think that I don't like reducing the opportunities for teams to have more championship to their name because you're kind of, I think, taking away from regular season accomplishments. I don't think that the second place team in the SEC baseball this year, say there's one that would have been from the old East, one from the old West, it kind of stinks that one is just not going to have anything anymore whenever it was still very difficult to get in that number two spot.
The scheduling imbalance, I think, is what bothers the coaches. And, you know, I've talked to more than just coaches about this, people who are inside of baseball, and they said they really worry about how the end of the season is going to look under this format. And Van Horn talked about this too. But, you know, basically, let's say you get to the end of the year and you know you're not going to make the NCAA tournament and you've got this freshman over here and it's like, okay, let's see what this guy's got. And you're playing teams who are in contention. And all of it's not like you're throwing the games necessarily, but you're not playing the games that maybe, you know, the way you played them the first 8 or 9 weeks of the season. And so, you know, at the end of the season, all of a sudden your SEC champion might be a team that caught a break at the end, whereas your team that was in the driver's seat, let's say Arkansas is number one or Tennessee is number one, and they got to play each other at the end of the year. It's a very interesting dynamic that I think you have to walk. Look at football this year when they got rid of divisions. Two of the easiest schedules in the SEC football this year, Texas and Tennessee. Both of them got to the playoff. Texas got to the SEC championship game. Tennessee nearly did. And, you know, so I think that it's always been that way to an extent when you have an overall champion. It's teams that maybe have caught some breaks in scheduling. But you did have division champions that could reward teams who maybe played a tougher schedule. Now you don't have that. It's the reason the ADs never wanted for years and years, they never wanted a college football playoff. It's because they could end the year in a bowl game and win that bowl game. And it didn't matter how the rest of the season went, people had a good feeling based on the fact that they won that bowl game. It's a similar thing here with baseball. I agree. I think baseball is better with divisions. I think that this, you know, the SEC preseason poll came out yesterday. It was just weird to see a 1-16 preseason poll and no division winners predicted.
And there's something about just, I don't know, the pageantry of baseball with divisions. Like, it's just...
Well, and let me interject here. The divisions in baseball went back to 1958 in the SEC.
Yeah.
In football and basketball, where they've gotten rid of them, there was, you know, I mean, I think they only existed in basketball for about 20 years because they got rid of those when A&M and Missouri came in the league. For football, they existed for 30 years. This is the first time in like 70 years they're not having divisions in baseball. It's just it's a totally different it's very deeply rooted in baseball.
And I just think that in college sports particularly, you have to protect the ability for rivalries to like really take root. And divisions are a way to ensure that happens.
I agree with that.
I'm an Atlanta Braves fan and I hate the Mets. I have always hated the Mets and the Phillies. They don't get a pass. The Marlins, eh. But it's just like, I don't know what I would do if I didn't get to have Mets hate weekend. I don't know how many times a year.
18 weekends a year?
Yeah, like, and it's just, I think that if you make a four-team, like, let's live in a theoretical world right now where they did divisions this year, and you have in a pod Arkansas, Texas, LSU, A&M. I just threw four out there. Mm. That's really tough, first of all, so that's imbalanced. But let's just imagine, those rivalries would be epic over the years. Like, well, you just get those.
And bringing that back home to Arkansas, they're going to play Ole Miss every year, and they're going to play Missouri every year. Missouri, Arkansas, whatever. Ole Miss, Arkansas, it's a nice baseball rivalry. They don't get to play Mississippi State, which has become a very fun annual series. LSU is a series that people always look forward to. Texas. I mean, can you imagine if Texas and Arkansas were permanent opponents and you could look forward to every other year a Friday night in Baum with Texas coming to town, or a Friday night at Dish Falk with Arkansas coming to town, A&M, another one. And so you lose a lot of these. You just lose a lot. I mean, I think that's the only way to say it.
Yeah, and it's just, I don't know, college sports unique in every aspect that your rivalries are awesome. And I get it. With today's day and age where a lot of it's so transfer heavy with these rosters, and it might not. I mean, you think about Arkansas, Kentucky basketball, that those Kentucky players, why should they care that Cal was, it's his return? Like, they're all a new team. I get it. It's a new day and age, but it means a lot to the fan bases. And I think that you have to have that in mind, preserving things that are important to fan bases. And whenever Arkansas, you know, maybe I just don't like change, but I don't know. It's just divisions in baseball is like, you know, peanut butter with jelly. They just they have to be together.
It's kind of like taking away the bat in baseball. What do you do without it, right?
Yeah, it's just, we're miserable over here, aren't we?
We want to tell you that Courtney Dienfeld's coming to the Hogs Illustrated Sports Club. That's going to be Wednesday, February 26th at noon. Home 2 Suites in Springdale. You can reserve your suite now at OzarksTix.com, OzarksTix.com for Courtney Dienfeld at the Hogs Illustrated Sports Club. Arkansas softball coach entering her 10th year with their first game this afternoon in San Marcos against Texas State.
Yeah, and it's actually a really tricky opening game. They're going up against the Sun Belt preseason favorites who got the eighth most votes to be ranked among teams that aren't ranked, and, you know, you're playing away your first game, so... Big challenge for them. It's the biggest challenge of the weekend for, like, once they get past Texas State, if they can, you know, it eases up a little bit with Lipscomb, Bradley, and San Diego. But another start to the year, a lot of people are calling them Women's College World Series sleepers this year. Like, I've seen that multiple places, that they think Arkansas has a team that, if you're just comparing rosters, they have a team that should contend to make it there. So we'll see if they can kind of finally break through that wall that they haven't been able to yet. But it's the same way that people treat Dave Van Horn with winning a natty. That's how I feel with Courtney Dienfeld and just making it to the Women's College World Series, because it is the Women's College World Series is so, like, it's always a lot of the same programs making it. So to bust through that wall, it almost feels like comparable to me to just Arkansas baseball where it's at winning a national championship. I'm curious to see if this is the year they can finally do it.
Arkansas women's basketball team also in action tonight at Mississippi State. You can come to our website, wholehogsports.com, throughout the day. We're going to have a ton of coverage there, whether it be from these games tonight with softball, women's basketball. Anthony's going to have some more men's basketball coverage on our site today. I think we'll have some more baseball stuff there, too. If you want to read Dave Van Horn's thoughts on the division changes, you can read that. The story's headlined, SEC Baseball Coaches Oppose Change from Divisions. We appreciate you being with us today. Hope that we'll see you at our website, and if not, we'll see you tomorrow on our podcast. Have a great day, everyone.